Well, hello there. Thank you for joining me today. You might want to pull up a chair. The plan is to get this done in this episode, but all good plans have changes. So there is a possibility that I may go into the third episode of this topic, which is pretty critical to talk about. So if I need to go into the third, I will, but it won't get into like 10 chapters because then after this, I will get into the why they're stabbing their fingers and all this ritual business. So let me see. Let me pull up this file. Okie dokie. So let's first talk about some things. Yeah, that's why you're here, right? Here are some things. Talk about some things. Okay, the world of hormones. We last left off. I was talking about John Money and this transsexual and sex reassignment business, right, from 1969. So let's reel it back a little bit. I really like looking at pictures. I've mentioned this before. Just sitting around looking at pictures is a lot of fun for me. And if you go on YouTube, you can find people have the pictures from their high school yearbooks posted. Now, those pictures can be very interesting because you can start to see women with Adam's apples in those pictures. You can start to see people who have been transgender. Now, do they all know they've been transgender? Well, I don't think so. I don't think so. And is the United States worse than other countries? Probably, probably. But I think that there has been a massive amount of hormone dumping on all of us, okay? Because they always want to get us on, they got just about everybody in this country on those statins, right? To so-called regulate the cholesterol and stuff. Well, that is not true, never was true. And what they do to get everybody on those statins is they manipulated the data. And I'm just going from memory from years ago because they kept trying to get me to take statins. And I looked into it at the time because I was going to a rather heavy doctor and a rather heavy nurse. I mean, just plain out obese, right? And here they're telling me that I need to go on cholesterol drugs. And I said, well, what does that mean? And they started pitching me the diet from the 50s, which is, go all low fat. Everybody wanted everybody to go low fat back in the 50s and 60s. That was not based on any data when that happened. And that happened because there was this fear over people getting fat, right? So here I've got this kind of fat doctor and fat nurse telling me I need statins. So I did look into it. And so I'm just going from memory here, so you might want to check my facts. But what happened was that they started just manipulating the data. So everybody's blood tests would come back in the area saying that they needed statins. So, and I can't remember what the different datas were, but yeah, that's exactly how it happened. They just manipulated the data. So if somebody went to look, you would think, oh, yeah, I guess I do need statins because it says right here that my blood at this level means I should take statins. Well, the data was manipulated. And don't forget the facts, okay? Doctors, this is eugenics. They only have studied in their entire medical career a half a day to a day, okay? So they always say clever things like, well, go ask your doctor. Well, why don't you just go ask your dog? Or how about asking your cat? It might be as effective as asking your doctor who knows little. Now, sure, there are some doctors on social media who claim that they know about vitamins and stuff, but well, be careful who you trust. But anyway, so yeah, because a doctor could say, well, I think that you're getting precancerous prostate. Okay. Because I said in the past that prostate cancer is one thing that they do castration on men for. You think, wow, really? Yeah, they do. So if your doctor says that you have prostate cancer, or in the range for getting prostate cancer, well, the treatment they give you would end up being the same result as what they did to those castrati boys, okay? So that's how they treat prostate cancer, is by taking care of the testes, which is the balls, and which is also where testosterone gets produced. So, yeah, and then the doctor could say, well, looks like you might be pre-prostate cancer. Let's get you in for a scan. Well, think very carefully before you get a scan, because that scan could also be triggering things, right? So then you come back, he says, well, come back after we get this scan. We'll keep a closer eye on this, right? And then cha-ching, cha-ching. And so they call you in, you come in a month. Well, let's review your scan. Saw a little bit of growth here that I'm not really sure how it's happening. So, maybe we should do another scan on you and then come back and we'll talk about maybe doing a biopsy. So now they've got you in the office, they're scanning you, they're talking about biopsying this thing they think they're talking about seeing. Well, those scans themselves are highly dangerous. If you do that same process with a pregnant woman and say, well, looks like your kid is having some deformities or something, right? And we'll check it in a month. Well, next time they check it, oh, glad we checked, because it's, big issues here. Well, how do you know that when they checked it the first time because of their quote unquote concerns? How do you know when they checked you the first time that first scan was what got you, right? So then you come back for the second friendly checkup because they're so concerned, right? And they do another scan. So now they got you doing two scans, right? And the second scan will show some troubling things. Well, how do you know that didn't come from the first scan, right? So just because they say people have these things doesn't mean they really have them, right? So, because the eugenicists, the people doing the eugenics, are also the ones in charge of the tests. So, don't ever lose sight of that. One significant thing that Obama did with this thing about the type of insurance they finally gave us in this country forced people to have annual checkups. Well, those checkups are the danger spots, right? Okay, so. In order to give you more evidence, I've been talking very offhandedly as far as, yeah, I'm sure that, because remember when I was born 72 years ago, we only got in my entire childhood probably three vaccines, okay? And then, so then after that was my first red flag years ago, because now, children in the United States get a lot more vaccines than other countries as a starter, and they also get so many so close together. So I've been saying for a long time, when a baby gets born in this country, they get whisked off to the back room. What happens in that back room? Well, they start shooting them up with things like aluminum and all kinds of dangerous things. Why would it be hard to see that they could slip in some estrogen for the boys, some testosterone for the girls, and start to get this mix? We have very feminine-ized men, and we have very masculine women. Things have been reversed. Women do not have the big heads and bigger hands. That's why most of the people that are fake women you see on the screen all have big heads and those big hands. And the men you see on the screen, like Tucker Carlson, for example, he has a smaller head. He's also wearing a wig and he has tiny, tiny hands because the bones do not lie. So it would not be complicated to be slipping us all kinds of things. And if you understand what's going on now, maybe you will be more able to accept what I'm going to be saying. So, first, let's take a look at what happens when you give, what about estrogen in men? Okay. Estrogen is often thought of as a female hormone. as the ovaries produce much of the hormone. However, males also have estrogen in their bodies, with about 20% of estrogen produced by the testes. The rest is produced in body fat, the brain, skin, and bones. Estrogen in the male body impacts many functions, but remember, you have to have the right amount of estrogen, right? So we're talking 20% for men, and that is for the maintenance and growth of bones, coordination of head and eye movement to support vision, the type and location of fat in the body and metabolism, sexual function in relation to libido, the sexual drive, erectile functioning, and the creation of sperm. So what happens if you change the ratio of estrogen and testosterone in the body? And I'll tell you how I looked this stuff up, because keep in mind, I did not study medicine, okay? I just have been learning what words to use, which would be keywords, which is how the internet is set up. I've had to learn what words to use to get me there, right? And there are a lot of people out there talking about this fertility stuff. So I found some people talking about, I just did some simple searches asking, like, why is too much testosterone bad for women? And I came up with these people with some very interesting things. So if you want to continue looking, just keep the word simple, like, why do men have too much estrogen? You know what I mean? See where you go from there. Okay, so symptoms of estrogen and testosterone imbalance. That is those things I just listed. Infertility, reduced sex drive, reduced muscle mass and energy, erectile dysfunction. So, hot flashes, decreased testicle size, enlarged breast growth, also known as man boobs. Ever wonder why men are all running around looking like they have breasts? Well, there's a word for it. It's called gynecomastia. Gynecomastia. And that means enlarged breast growth. Man boobs are a thing. If you look at the men on the screen, like, for example, let's look at Tony Blair. Tony Blair is actually a woman. And I have a picture over on my community page over on YouTube. And Tony Blair has breasts that look more like a woman's breasts. Women's breasts are a little bit closer in. And so, yeah, they have to get mastectomies to remove that breast tissue. So it also is happening in men who are getting too much estrogen just in general, like just from drinking milk, where cows are getting a lot of estrogen. And I have a lot of information about where we're getting all this stuff from, but this is essentially how it's happening, right? It's not just out of the blue that all of a sudden men have very short necks and women have the long necks. The fake women now all have those extra long arms and extra long legs. The men have the shorter legs, the shorter torsos. That's because of the hormone imbalance. So they start to get some female things like decreased this enlarged breast growth. Also, low energy fractures. They can get these rare genetic things. And just so you know, if you're wondering, well, how'd she learn these hormones? Well, because I kept looking and looking and looking. And years ago, I started wondering, and I kept thinking it has to do with the hormones. And I know nothing about any of this stuff, right? So I found a YouTube channel that had all of these deformed children, and the channel has like, a million or two subscribers. And every child in this channel that they feature has some sort of dreadful disease, which has made it have like no arms, or maybe the eyes are weird. And so all of these children all have some major deformities, right? So I first started out when I would read that some celebrity had some disease, right? I would just copy that disease, always copy and paste it so you don't maybe misspell something. I would copy and paste that disease into search, and then I would put hormones after it. So if the disease was Parkinson's, for example, then I would type hormones after that, and then I would just take it for a spin on Yandex and see what I come up with. And what I started finding was that all of these diseases had a connection to hormone use. So that's how I originally started out. And then I spent a lot of time on YouTube at that channel with those crazy, not crazy kids, but you know what I mean, horribly deformed children. That was a very, very depressing period. I spent several months on that channel because a lot of data. What they would do is they would feature some child and their family. And so, yeah, I was curious, like, where'd that kid come from? Was it born by them? All that kind of stuff. So, yeah, in watching that channel, I was writing down all of these diseases. I used to have this file, and I would write down every disease these kids would say that they had, right? And all of them kept coming back with hormone issues. So, and just doing simple searches, that's how I started coming up with. And I started thinking, hey, wait a minute here. That's how it's happening, because I started wondering, like, how did transgender women who have breast implants, why would a transgender woman with breast implants be running a charity for breast cancer for women, right? Well, because certain hormones, overuse of hormones, will go into the breast and create cancer. That's how a man who becomes a woman can end up with breast cancer. So those are my initial questions. So none of it was very complicated. I just came up with some very, very simple things to look at, and then started paying pretty good attention to it. And so then I ended up with this huge file of all these diseases, and I thought, hey, well, no reason to keep a file anymore because now I got it. So anyway, another thing which happens to men who have testosterone, excuse me, with men who have estrogen, which is interesting because the castrati children who are boys, by neutering them, like you really would neuter your household cat, okay? When they just clamp off the testes, that's how you neuter a cat, right? They clamp off the testes. Well, this same thing is how they did the castrati kids. Well, something about that process cuts off the testosterone production, right? Well, one thing with castrates is they grew to be very tall. So it must be the estrogen, right? Because here it says estrogen in men gives in the breasts and also quicker than normal physical development that stops sooner than others and short stature. So that's another clue to look for. So really, they're always saying, oh, this stuff is complicated. What, who, how do you know this stuff? Are you, did you go to genetic school? Well, no, you don't have to do any of those things. Just break it down where you can understand it. So I came up with this saying, and it said the following at one of these sites about men becoming feminized. The following is a quick, simple lesson on brain chemistry. A little known fact I learned in neurochemistry while in school at Florida State University is that mammals, including humans, all offspring initially have a female brain, including boys. So now we know that all humans initially have a female brain, including boys. During the utero cycle, the Y chromosome signals the mother to release testosterone. This increase in testosterone causes the ovaries to become testicles and changes the female brain of the male infant to the brain of the male. So they're starting off, everybody's starting off with a female brain, right? And then that Y chromosome, the increase in testosterone causes the ovaries to become testicles. So then it goes on to say, or at least that is what is supposed to happen. Remember, it takes a required amount of testosterone from the mother to do this change. Testosterone and estrogen are antagonists, and one can dominate the other. If too much estrogen is present, then the testosterone cannot do its job. Back in the 1940s, the Rockefeller companies introduced plastics into the ecosystem. They knew when they did so that many of the plastics were called exoestrogens, which, if consumed by humans, would feminize males. That is spelled Xenoestrogens. So what they're saying is they knew back then, now I didn't confirm any of this stuff, okay? They knew that plastics were I can't say it anyway, so which, if consumed by humans, would feminize males. Also, we always remember that gasoline is a byproduct of the petrochemical industry. It used to be disposed of as a waste product. And remember, too, I did that show about fluoride. You know, we allowed them to dump fluoride in our water. And if you are brushing your teeth with fluoride, it's very dangerous to swallow that same fluoride, right? So they have been major dumping lots of things into the system that we all access, right? And they have gotten away with it because people who yelled about the fluoride were deemed crazy, right? All of us always get called crazy. Then, if we can live past being called crazy, eventually people figure out, well, I think they were right all along. So, anyhow, so yeah, we accepted them dumping all of this stuff. And here in the United States, we have also accepted a lot of chemicals that are absolutely not allowed in Europe or other countries. So, anyhow, so went on to say, oil companies earn thousands of dollars per barrel by making estrogens in the form of cosmetics, perfumes, drugs, plastics, fertilizer, weed killer, detergents, and the list goes on and on. Just go do a check for yourself. Look at cosmetics in the United States versus Europe. The deadly stuff is all allowed here and not over there. So, it said the gasoline could literally be given away for free as a byproduct. So there's so much of this being used in all of those things. It says, again, many of these plastics and compounds being used today are known for this. If absorbed into the skin or taken internally, they react in the body as estrogen. This increase in estrogen in many cases is the root cause of the problems already mentioned. And also, I've done a show about in the vaccines, they're using things called atrazine, which they claim makes frogs change sexes. Is that true? I don't know. But in all of these chemicals, there are consequences. That's why they want us using these chemicals. When I was raised, we washed our hands, okay? My mother should have been in charge of this operation. No one had to remind us kids to wash our hands. And as an adult, I did not have a lot of diseases and flus and stuff because I washed my hands. We're basically living around a bunch of slobs who do not wash their hands. So then you combine that by going out and buying food that everybody else has been handling, and you end up with all of these other things into the mix. So Hand sanitizers, well, that's never going to get it like soap and water will, but it will get it because it will go after your hormones if you use a hand sanitizer, right? Also, petrochemical soaps like Dawn, they show examples that Dawn soap, DAWN, look, I can use Dawn to get the grease up out of my driveway. Well, ever wonder what it's doing to your hands? So this short list is only a few of the actuals, but it's in the hundreds. If a pregnant human female is exposed to this onslaught of estrogen mimickers, then in many cases, sufficient testosterone cannot be released to make the male fetus a totally, fully developed male. When this happens, the brain will remain female. It will not become a male brain. And in many cases, reproductive organs in the male are extremely small. The result will be a feminized boy with a female brain and small genitalia. Basically, a woman in a sort of a male body, a metro male. What a mess all this becomes when men play God with nature. These half men and half women act and think like women. In many cases, but not all, they are attracted to other men, and some want to wear makeup, dresses, and women's clothes. This is not a joke or a subject for ridicule, for these men were literally chemically castrated in the uterus. That's why we're seeing these big guts on men and man boobs, right? Men do not carry their weight in the belly. Women do. But you look around, all these men have big, huge boobs and big, huge guts. So how does this work? Your body produces most of your testosterone while you sleep. Why do you think they want everybody up 24/7 on social media? The less you sleep, the less your body has time for reparative things. So we need, and go look at my list of shows called Top Podcasts, okay? We don't really understand a lot of things we should understand, like the fact that our bodies are electrical, right? That's why electricity is so bad for us, actually. So, yeah, and a critical element to these fine-tuned bodies that we have, which are very powerful and intentionally built, our creator was much smarter than these people, okay? So we need that sleep. That's when we get our restorative energy. That's why you see people running around looking so haggard and stuff, because when you sleep, your hormones restore. Okay, so your body produces most of your testosterone while you sleep. So the more hours of quality sleep you get, the more time your body has to produce testosterone. So, when you're stressed, your testosterone levels drop and your stress hormones and estrogen increase. It's while you sleep. Sleep is your body's natural reset button. It's when your body calms stress and increases testosterone for the following day. And I'll be talking more about this sleep thing when I do my 3-year check-in, which I'm planning on doing after this show, I swear, after this show. Okay, so then I looked into, so now we know a little bit more about what testosterone and estrogen do for men, right? Well, women, there can be many reasons for some women having too much testosterone. For example, high testosterone in women can be a result of dysfunction with your adrenal glands, thyroid issues, high blood sugar, carrying around too much weight, and lack of exercise. pregnant women also produce small amounts of testosterone during pregnancy. For women, high testosterone levels can mean changes in their appearance of body that can cause distressing symptoms. For example, if girls who are approaching puberty have levels of testosterone higher, they may take on a more masculine-like appearance. All the girls now have those jaws like men. They have the necks like men. They have the arms and legs like men. Look around. Adult women with high testosterone may find they develop symptoms that are common in men. For example, doctors from the Mayo Clinic say that male pattern baldness, increase in facial hair, cessation of periods, and even infertility can be some of the upsetting issues that high testosterone in women create. Look around. Lots of otherwise looking normal women appear to have pretty bald-looking heads, if you ask me. Excess sex hormones like testosterone are also referred to as hyperandrogenism. Causes of high levels of testosterone in women. High blood sugar. One common reason why a woman may have higher than normal testosterone is having high blood sugar. Research into the complication of diabetes has found that insulin resistance can result in an excess of androgen hormones in women. Geez, look at all the people with diabetes around us, right? For example, the journal Diabetes Metabolism Research and Reviews found that high serum testosterone is common in women with type 2 diabetes. The elevated levels of testosterone could also cause other complications that affect fertility, polycystic ovary syndrome. Researchers said that lowering testosterone levels in women affected by hyperandrogenism is necessary to protect against metabolic disorders. Looks like high testosterone in women, which I think clearly probably got a big shot of it the minute that you're born, right? Dysfunction of your thyroid gland could be a reason why you're showing signs of too much testosterone, like balding, excess body hair, or acne. Your thyroid also plays a role in controlling hormones in your body. An underactive thyroid or hypothyroidism has been linked to symptoms of high testosterone. Your adrenal glands, which is where we get our stress from, right, produce a small amount of the androgen hormone testosterone, and any dysfunction with them could create imbalances of testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone. Being overweight or obese could be a reason why you have high testosterone along with high blood sugar levels. Obesity can affect hormone production in both men and women and make it difficult to lose weight. According to research published in Fertility and Sterility, women who are overweight often show symptoms of elevated testosterone. Hyperandrogenism can cause metabolic syndrome that causes excess fat around the waist, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. And what do they give? I was thinking about what do they give everybody that could also be loaded with hormones, right? Hidden hormones. For example, I did that show a few years ago about how all medicines are being produced in raw materials, either out of India or China. And people have always said, Well, that's the craziest thing they've ever heard. Look, here on my bottle it says made in the USA. No, what happens is that vitamins are unregulated. So if they do part of the packaging here, they can say made in the USA, and they usually will have a tagline that says from international sources. The international sources don't mean Europe. They mean Asia, India, or China. That's what it means. So it all comes packaged in from those countries. So ask yourself this, how hard would it be to pack in a bunch of hormones? Oh, I don't know. They get most pregnant women to take prenatal vitamins, right? They force vitamins on children. How hard would it be to load these things up with hormones, right? Because if you've stored too much of a certain vitamin or mineral, your body will react. An overdose of vitamins A, D, or E will often cause nausea, fatigue, and headaches. A vitamin A overdose may also cause blurry vision and skin shedding. Vitamin D overdoses may cause appetite loss in addition to bone pain. If you've taken too much vitamin E, you may also experience double vision or excessive bleeding and bruising. Don't think you will take the brunt of a vitamin overdose. Your baby may experience some effects as well. Both vitamins A and D are linked to birth defects when taken in excess. And I talked about those scans. Yeah, those scans are another deadly thing they have going on. Evil package and looking like help, right? What about baby formula? Babies all seem to be drinking baby formula with enhanced vitamins, right? Vitamins and milk enhanced for the babies, right? So yeah, I think that there is a lot of it coming our way. And let me see here. Because yesterday I forgot to tell you what links I had below, so I didn't put them below, but I have a bunch of links below for you to take a look at. I want you to be aware of this. I talked about it so long ago. Most of the people on the screen are either bald or they're wearing wigs, okay? And some of them just wear kind of wild-looking wigs, right? Like look at Tucker Carlson. Definitely the guy is wearing a wig. So some of them just wear flat-out wild-looking wigs, right? So then I guess we're programmed to think wigs only look a certain way, right? But most of these wigs we see are what is called, they're actually kind of like glued onto their head. And you will notice that a lot of them also have widow's peaks. Well, what a better way to line up your wig than to give yourself a widow's peak in your wig. So when you go to put your wig on again, you can line it up by having a widow's peak, right? Now, some people obviously have real widow's peak, but you'll notice a lot of these transgender people on the screen are wearing wigs. And I gave you another clip. I hope you'll take a look at it seriously this time because there's a reason why they're all bald. Now, wouldn't it be kind of funny if one day all of the fake women on the screen, you know, all the newscasters and stuff, or all the top social media people, wouldn't it be funny one day if none of them wore their wigs? So yeah, the men and the women are wearing wigs. Okay, so I have the links for this Rex Deuce business, okay? And this, I believe, is critical. That's the group of European aristocratic families allegedly descendant from the family lines of the 24 high priests of the Temple of Solomon in Jerusalem. That's them, okay? Also, I have a link down there as far as this X business. You notice that Twitter changed its name to X, and recently they're talking about this new disease is going to be called X. Well, there's symbolism. Anyway, there's an article there, David Icke's group did a thing about the letter X. And I have some more information about these, what I was just talking about, the chemical gender manipulation, turning boys into girls, and then four warning signs of too much estrogen in men, what causes high estradiol levels in males, high testosterone in women's causes. Okay, was pedophilia advocate John Money the father of transsexualism and the father of the American Catholic bishop sex abuse scandal? Yes, they were. It was John Money, Kenzie, and then there's one other person I have here. So, and then I have some files about Kenzie, the story behind the father of the sexual revolution. Kenzie did that whole sexual revolution thing. It's okay to be gay. It's okay to do this. Kennedy cover-ups. John Hopkins resumes trans care. I'll have that here in a bit because Johns Hopkins started off with the beginning. They were the first to do transgender surgeries. Then they got out of the business, and I tracked down why they got out of the business. So anyway, but now they're back in it again. So also, John Hopkins is now erasing women from new woke language, referring to women as non-men. They're also referring to women as breeders. See where this is all going? Okay, then there was a report as far as these blah, blah, blah. The U.S. seminaries. Boy, what a hotbed those things are for these priests, because young men go in to become priests and they get raped while they're it's a hot mess. Okay, so in case you're wondering how these surgeries happen, how do they take a man and turn it into a woman? They have to do it by splinting and splicing the penis. And that is a process called vaginoplasty. And it is a horror show. I've watched all of these surgeries. None of them do what they say they're going to do. What they do is they say that they split open the penis. And this is graphic as I'm going to get. They split open the penis. They actually make a hole to shove it in there to make it like a vagina. And the only way it works is if it gets dilated like every day. The whole thing is cruel, inhumane, and leading these kids into a horrible path. But these are the kids that are being tricked on social media to think that they're transgender. So why is that happening? Well, because, like I'm saying, because these kids probably are in the wrong hormones, right? These boys we see probably have too much estrogen that's leading them to think, get rid of this penis. Let me be a girl. See how this could all be working, right? And then I'll be talking in a bit about how this whole thing started in Colorado. I did a show about that with this guy, Benjamin, and that John Money guy. John Money did some unspeakable things to children right in the open. So anyway, so my links are a bit of a mess because I kind of got confused with them. Anyway, just look and see. There may be some duplicates. I don't really know. Okay, so let's get back to how this stuff got started. Okay, here's how it got started. There was a person we also need to pay attention to named Richard Green. So the first book on gender dysphoria was edited. Now, I don't know what this means by edited, right? Was edited by sexologist Richard Green and John Money and was published by Johns Hopkins University Press in 1969. It was the first medical textbook to be published on transgender people. The book contained a chapter on hormone replacement theory written by Christian Hamburger and included an appendix with additional treatment suggestions and guidelines by Harry Benjamin. Now, remember, Harry Benjamin basically only had a few patients that were his whole way that he got his theories, right? So who was Richard Green? Richard Green, born June 1936, fortunately he is dead April 2019, was an American British sexologist, psychiatrist, lawyer, and author known for his research on homosexuality and transsexualism. So what I'm saying is, this is a very key point here, and this Richard Green person, we need to keep him in play here, okay? Because they were cooking up all of this homosexual business, right? This gay business, which would make sense because people would read about this stuff in these books, right? And think, yeah, that sounds like me. I have all these female thoughts. Well, yeah, because you got too much estrogen in your system, right? So this is why it's always important to look at the beginning and keep it simple, right? Because any of us can figure out that you give a man too much estrogen and he's probably going to start acting like a woman, right? Now, will it change everything about his entire body? No, but like we just discovered today, it does impact the brain. Now, somebody needs to double check all this stuff again, but I'm pretty sure this is how it works. So, Richard Green was also known for his behavioralism experiment, in which he attempted to prevent male homosexuality and transsexuality by extinguishing female behavior in young boys. He later came to favor biological explanations for male homosexuality. Green was the founding editor of the Archives of Sexual Behavior, 1971, and served as editor until 2001. He also was the founding excuse me. He also was the founding president of the International Academy of Sex Research, 1975, which made the archives its official publication. And this is where it gets critical about Green. He served on the American Psychiatric Association DSM-IV Subcommittee on Gender Identity Disorders. So, if you're looking for where a lot of this stuff that these other psychiatrists got, look no further than Richard Green. So, during his medical studies at Johns Hopkins, Green met John Money, who was an associate professor there, and started collaborating with him on research, initially on boys displaying substantial cross-gender behavior. In 1960, they published the paper in well, something about gender roles, detailing their observations of five, get this, five male children who showed incongruities in gender roles, ranging from preferring to play with girls to praying that God would change them into a girl. Citing, remember, I'm going to be reading some of these things that these people say, okay? And just because they say it happened doesn't mean that I'm saying, oh, yeah, it makes sense to me, because they're going to be saying some things in a minute here, which make no sense, okay? So just remember, I'm reading what they're saying, okay? So, because remember also, a lot of these girls that thought they were boys, that I followed these kids, groups of them, okay? There were a lot of girls who thought they should be boys, which I think because they had too much testosterone, right? They went the whole surgery route, and then they figured out that they were really gay, and they get into a gay relationship with a gay woman. See how it's all been working? And what happens is all this confusion funnels these kids to these horrifically mutilating surgeries and very expensive surgeries. So let me keep going here. So the observations of five male children. Now, I don't know. You could always say, bring me five male children to study who act like women. Well, yeah, I mean, okay, so And remember, these people are, in fact, in my opinion, a little bit off their rockers themselves when you start to figure out what John Money was involved in, okay? And remember, John Money was not a doctor, okay? This other guy, Green, was a doctor, but Money was not a doctor, so just hold that thought. So they were citing that adult gay men and transgender women recollect gender incongruity in childhood. They later concluded early intervention is best in case of gender incongruity, and that part of the successful rearing of a child is orientating him from birth to his biologically and culturally acceptable gender role. This, as far as we know, is best achieved by providing a relationship between husband and wife exemplifying these respective roles. In 1961, they published, and this all came from their own Wikipedia page, okay? I really don't have the time to sit around and make up stories, okay? And this is a crazy one, okay? So in 1961, they, and that would be John Mooney and this Green character, published a paper titled Effeminacy in Prepubertal Boys, which looked at 11 young boys who were referred for their excessive and persistent attempts to dress in the clothes of the opposite gender, constant display of gestures and mannerisms of the opposite sex, preference for play and other activities of the opposite sex, or a stated desire to be a member of the opposite sex. And you know where they where this one always just sets me off the rails, okay? Kids want to be all kinds of things, right? Kids want to be astronauts. Little boys want to be cowboys. Little boys want to be astronauts. They're mimicking what they're seeing. That does not mean they have the cognitive ability to understand fully what they're saying. Like kids want to be firemen too, right? Well, when that kid grows up, he may understand better the downside to going out being a fireman, right? And change his mind. But the idea that strikes you as a kid is not always going to be in your best interest as an adult. So, they recommended that parents look for insidious. Wait a minute. They recommended that parents, and this is quoted, look for insidious and irrational ways in which parents might be unwittingly encouraging girlishness and penalizing their sons for developing boyishly. Both parents should convey to their son their wholehearted approval of his present and future masculine behavior and sexuality. The paper conflated gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation, viewing femininity in boys as a problem to be fixed so as not to lead to adult homosexuality and transvestism. In 1968, Green published Childhood Cross Gender Identification, a paper reviewing the therapy of nine. Now he has nine young male children who were younger than 8 and clearly prepubertal. The first six were from the collaborative papers between Green and Money. The last three were from Robert Stroller, citing the failure of attempts to cure adult trans women. He reported early diagnosis and treatment may be effective in preventing manifestations of adulthood cross gender identification. The stated goals of family therapy are for the husband and wife to gain some perspective on the second class citizen of the husband and of the significance of their unbalanced roles in shaping their son's personality. Additional focus is on the masculinity inhibiting, excuse me, additional focus is on the masculinity inhibiting of mother's anxiety over her son's healthy aggression and her greater comfort with what to her is his less threatening behavior. In Money's obituary, Green acknowledged Money and Robert Stoller, as well as his father, Leo H. Green, for having set the course of his life and career. In the mid-1960s, Money introduced Green to Harry Benjamin, whom Green acknowledges as having further honed his career. So that's how Green, Money, and now we have Benjamin in the picture, right? And how did this all happen that they got into the trans business and then got out of it? Johns Hopkins was an early pioneer in American trans care until anti-LGBT activist Paul McHugh, MCHUGH, began working at the hospital. In 1979, McHugh was able to end trans care at Johns Hopkins and later wrote that it was his goal to force the closure of the hospital's gender program. And he said, "It was part of my intention when I arrived in Baltimore in 1975 to help end it." McHugh went on to describe his professional assessment of how and why transgender medical care was made available at Johns Hopkins. So he was the one that had an issue with it, supposedly, right? And then this was in June of 2023. Johns Hopkins erases women from new woke language, refers to them as non-men. The formerly prestigious Johns Hopkins University of Maryland recently issued a new inclusive language guide for the modern era that does away with the concept of women entirely. In the guide's lesbian section, women are now strictly referred to as non-men, even though men are still called men in the gay section. The LGBTQ plus glossary is filled with all sorts of new terms and phrases that cater strictly to the transgender crowd. This is what happens, right? They start rewriting history. There was this person, and she wrote about what happened with Johns Hopkins. And it's important to know this before you learn a little bit down here as far as this money person, what exactly he did. There's this person called Gil Peterson, an associate professor at the Department of History, and I'm pretty sure at Johns Hopkins. She did a talk called History and Harm, The Unfinished Trans Story of Johns Hopkins Hospital, explored the university's historic relation to trans and intersex communities and how this legacy continues today. So she went on to describe that she was doing this. She sounds like she's transgender herself, but I don't know this for a fact, okay? But she was writing this book called Histories of the Transgender Child. Because, well, just listen for yourself here. Seemed kind of pro-trans to me, but anyway, so she went on to say, "I wanted to understand how trans youth fit into the broader history of trans medicine and the history of medicine more broadly," she said. "I found some kinds of hints and documents that there were some trans teenagers who had been to Johns Hopkins to transition as far back as the 1960s. The Johns Hopkins Hospital opened the nation's first gender identity clinic in 1966. From her research, Gil Peterson found that Hopkins psychologists had lobbied for a teenager," and this is where it just gets insane, okay? So This is supposedly, okay? This woman finds out that the Hopkins, as in the Johns Hopkins psychologist, had lobbied for a teenager that was on trial for burglary to be granted gender affirmation surgery instead of prison over a year prior to the clinic's opening. Hopkins psychologists thought the teenager, known under the pseudonym GL, engaged in delinquent behavior because of their transgender identity. GL never received the gender affirming surgery due to psychiatrists who disagreed with it. Although some clinicians viewed children's developing bodies as an opportunity to experiment on sex and gender, many children at the time were denied access to gender-affirming care. Gils Peterson describes how GL's case illustrates the double bind that trans children found themselves in. In some cases, like GL, trans kids found doctors who were willing to oversee them medically transition. But for most children clinicians, excuse me, but for most children clinicians were more interested in trying to stop them from being trans, she said. She discussed early 20th century medicine's understanding of the plasticity of sex and gender, including the definition of the term bisexual. By bisexual, they meant that everyone was normal, somewhat of a mix of male and female characteristics, she said. This view held that humans never lost the potential to become the other sex. And remember, too, these people all think they're going to be coming up with that's where all this transhuman stuff is headed, right? Okay, I'll continue reading. She emphasized that children became essential to this discourse on sex and gender's plasticity because they seemed to be the strongest case to show gender undergoing changes during childhood, which would resolve into a binary gender in adulthood. John Money, a psychologist at Hopkins, encouraged the idea of plasticity through his views on sex and gender. Money was one of the psychologists who lobbied in favor of GL undergoing gender-affirming surgery. And here's the definition here. If you are a psychologist, okay, you're kind of like you've taken a whole bunch of courses in psychology, right? Now, how do you become a psychiatrist? Well, to become a psychiatrist, you also have to have a medical degree, right? So that Green character, he had a medical degree because he was also, beyond a lawyer, he was also a psychiatrist. So this John Money person is a psychologist, okay? He never studied surgeries or any of the things that doctors have to do. Because you can be a psychologist, you graduate from college, a couple more years, you become a psychologist, 2 more years, you become a psychiatrist, you see what I'm saying? And then 3 or 4, you become an MD. So a psychologist is not an MD. So Money was one of the psychologists who lobbied in favor of GL undergoing gender affirmation surgery. And I've talked in the past, they're always trying to get these test cases because this thing is just suspicious all the way around for me, right? They find this kid who was supposedly breaking into houses and they say that, well, if we change their gender, they'd be okay. Well, so I believe this kid was used as some sort of a test case, okay, that they just basically cooked up. So let me continue reading. Money began to say that gender was a social problem. That anyone whose gender doesn't match their sex would likely suffer social stigma in the world, she said. Children would be bullied. They would feel upset. All social problems, not medical problems. Same thing they're talking now. Well, if we don't transgender these kids, they're all going to commit suicide. Are you aware that more of these kids commit suicide after these horrific treatments than because of? Because most children grow out of these things. That's why they're called children and not adults, right? I think most of these people act like they themselves were never children. Otherwise, how would they sit there and act so stupid, right? Kids live in a fantasy world sometimes. So what they did was they viewed it as a social issue. So money began to say that gender was a social problem, that anyone whose gender doesn't match their sex would likely suffer social stigma. And what parent would want to set their kid up to be bullied and socially stigmatized, right? Probably the way they sold this to parents of the world, right? Well, your kid sure acts pretty feminine to me. So, you know, if we don't do these surgeries and make your boy a girl, then, well, you know, he's going to be bullied the rest of his life, probably commit suicide, become an alcoholic, live in a one-bedroom apartment all by himself. Yeah, that's how they probably would start to describe these kids. Like, if your boy ever played with his sister and she was playing with dolls, get him down here. We gotta get some drugs into him. And remember, these people, these priests, these doctors, these people, to me, now you may come up with different ideas about these people, but these people all appear fucking demented to me, okay? So these people are the ones who are guiding this stuff, right? Just like those creepy priests telling families how to behave. Priests who don't even have families, right? Interfering in families and advising them on how to be good parents. Well, I think we already had that covered, right? I don't think we needed these people at any level, right? So what's that old saying? Misery loves company. So then people start joining churches and they, yeah, that priest really helped my family. I think your family should join too. Get everybody else to join. So yeah, so they said it was a social issue, which would be far easier to sell, right? So I'll keep reading. Money in particular felt that if a child was just given a clear physical anatomical sex by surgery and hormones at an early enough age, doctors could assign a child any gender. Of course, that wasn't true, and over the years, many children would grow up to find they did not feel comfortable with the sex they had been assigned. And remember, think about this language, right? This language started changing in the last several years that they say that, well, your birth gets assigned later, right? Meaning there's some confusion. You could be getting born, but the confusion is there, and you'll have to figure this out later. Like all this stuff is just, oh, it's just all up in the air, right? No, they know you're either a boy or a girl, right? We're not confused, but what they started doing was adding these clever, sneaky little words, right? The original Hopkins Gender Identity Clinic closed in 1979 due to conservative pressure. Hopkins opened a new clinic in 2017. So this person then went on to propose that they do all these things. And for reparation, she said that they did a lot of terrible things. And so she doesn't get into all the really terrible things they did, but so they so Johns Hopkins started it all, right? His money person was right there. Faced with the failure of psychotherapy to change the minds of transsexuals to match their bodies, Johns Hopkins physicians in 1966 began instead to try to match the bodies to the patients' minds. And this is where the whole transgender thing took wings. Doctors at several other medical centers soon took up the complex operation that previously had been province primarily of doctors in Tijuana, Casablanca, and Barcelona, and a few private physicians in this country. I did a show about the transgender stuff in Casablanca, and I think that was the whole thing about that movie Casablanca, because, yes, Casablanca, big, big transgender surgery place. Right now, Iran is a huge transgender surgery place, but not going to get into all that right now. But so they went on to say that since then, an estimated 4,000 persons, I don't know if that's true. The surgery attracts so much public attention because of its extreme and irreversible nature. In changing a male to female, the penis and testicles are removed, and an artificial vagina is constructed. Female sex hormones are given, and sometimes the breasts are enlarged surgically. In changing a female to a male, the breasts, ovaries, and uterus are removed. Testicles are... The first one was a male to a female. So now we're talking about changing a female to a male. So if you're a woman and you want to become a male, the standard procedures are the breasts, ovaries, and uterus are removed. Testicles are constructed. And sometimes a penis is made from skin flaps. And yes, I have watched all of these surgeries. And they take out this huge hunk of skin from their arm. I've also seen people with that huge hunk of skin from their arm. So then I knew what they had been up to, right? Because that huge hunk of skin to make this fake penis is pretty big. So anyway, so so that's how the whole John Hopkins thing got rolling, right? And behind those respectable white coats, right? Anyway, I'm going to keep scrolling down here. Most major hospitals doing transsexual surgeries. Yeah, now there's no rules. Now it's just about the money. Just about the money. Okay, so how did this happen? Well, what they did was they started by conflating pedophilia with gay people. And once you start conflating things around, then people feel kind of like, well, I'm relieved that I'm gay because they were saying I might have been a pedophile, right? So you start conflating things around, and this is my opinion, they conflate it so they cause maximum confusion, right? So then people can log online to say, am I a pedophile or what's going on here, right? So people can then go on the hunt for themselves, and that's where those algorithms, a lot of these kids that go searching for sex identity things on social media, the algorithm kick in and they become confused. They start saying, well, gee, if I wasn't transgender, if I wasn't gay, then why would these other shows start showing up? So it's easy to trick kids because you're a big lying psychopath, right? So that's how they trick kids into thinking all this stuff. So anyway, there was this other article I found. Let me see. Nor is there any indication. The problem in America and in the American church is the acceptance of homosexual conduct and the cover-up of its connection to pedophilia. So what they did was they used these experts, that John Money guy, all these people, that the ones who'd cooked up all this stuff, they became the experts who guided the Catholic Church. So the American church used these so-called experts who were in fact advocates of pedophilia to advise the church and to treat the accused priests. There's a woman named Judith Reisman. I talked about her in the past. I was going to interview her and never did. Lots of reasons, not important here, but Judith Reisman quoted in this article, she said that Dr. Berlin and John Money, PhD, co-founded a celebrated sexual training and treatment center. the Johns Hopkins Sexual Disorder Clinic. Dr. Money, as it turns out, was a dedicated Kenzie disciple. And so, anyway, so, and on the advisory board of the Kenzie Institute. So Dr. Money sat on the board of the Kenzie Institute. And remember, Kenzie was the one, and I'll make sure and try to post it below, in the chapter of his first book about sexuality, he had this special chart. It was chart 34, I believe. And it had the most revolting graph of all about masturbating infants, okay? And all of his research was done using pedophiles. And he and this Money person, they all became the consultants and the basis for what the Roman Catholic Church did. Now, how just nuts is all this stuff? And this is why, like, I can't say it often enough. When you look to how this stuff gets started, you have to kind of wonder, holy crap, how did anybody not look into these people, really, and think all of this was okay? So then he went into cities where he interviewed prostitutes, homosexuals, criminals, and more. Meanwhile, the university, which is University of Indiana, and all of the records for all this horror are still right now at the University of Indiana. So the University of Indiana, in partnership with the Rockefeller Foundation, established the Institute for Sex Research of 1947, of which Kenzie was a director. Alfred Kenzie, I call him Albert a lot, but his name is really Alfred, okay? Alfred Kenzie ultimately collected around 5,300 sex histories from his subjects, which he published in the first of his two-book series known as the Kenzie Reports. The explosive 1948 sexual behavior of the human male. Before the 1950s, sex education was extremely controversial. Sex itself was somewhat private and taboo, mostly for undesirable reasons, further than Victorian prudence. Venereal disease and unexpected pregnancies were lethal. The first lessons on sexuality were devised in 1919 Communist Hungary by George Lucas, Deputy Commissioner for Culture, whose publicly stated mission was to remove the roadblock of religious morality. Alfred Kenzie's best-selling books provided the foundation of the claims made for the sexual revolution and gay rights movements. John Money's literature provided the foundation of revolutionary thinking on sex change and gender identity. The very idea the state or the education system should provide lessons on sexuality is the result of these people's ideas. These men are to sexuality what Joseph Mengele was to genetics. Our modern contemporary attitudes to sexuality and gender are based on the social sciences academic laundering of these individuals' so-called groundbreaking material. Money's notions of gender roles are accepted as gospel, as is Kenzie's scale, due to political groups weighing them as evidence for moral claims, which became laws and curricula. Their ideas are celebrated as constituted as Western sex education we take for granted as part of the topic list for school children. As with all the social sciences, the corruption follows a similar modus operandi. These politicized academics start with the conclusion they want to reach and make sure the methodology and evidence prove it. Between 1948 and 1953, Alfred Kenzie, he was a zoologist. at Indiana University published two reports which are cited as evidence. Human sexuality is fluid and exists on a continuum scale. The first was composed of interview of 5,300 men and the other around 8,000 women. I coughed on purpose because actually it was only a couple people, right? They claimed it was a whole bunch of people, but it was only a couple. Kinsey was so insane that he actually used to he used to masturbate while he was hanging himself in the facility there at Indiana University. And if you want to study some just insane looking people, go look at the people that are still running that thing over at Indiana University. Talk about a creepy looking group of people. Okay, so he published Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, 1948. Sexual Behavior in the Human Female, 1953. Kinsey's work is cited as authoritative evidence on human sexuality and popularized the contemporary belief people aren't necessarily born heterosexual, but vary in their disposition. His heterosexual homosexual rating scale ran from 1 to 6. In 1949, he testified before the California General Assembly Subcommittee on Sex Crimes, urging them to liberalize sex offense statutes. He argued specifically for granting immediate paroles to suspected child molesters and warned that society's societal hysteria does more harm to children than the actual molestation. It is difficult to understand why a child, except for its cultural conditioning, should be disturbed at having its genitalia touched, or disturbed at seeing the genitalia of other persons, or disturbed at even more specific sexual contacts. That was quoted by Kinsey. What's most disturbing is who this man was and what his intentions were. We now know, thanks to what you might call harassment of him by a fundamental Christian campaigner, Dr. Judith Reisman, despite being a controversial character herself, the evidence from Reisman's investigations are startling. And this is a quote. Mr. Jones' book revealed that Kinsey had had affairs with men, encouraged open marriages among his staff, stimulated himself with urethral insertion and ropes, and filmed sex in his attic. He described Kinsey circumcised himself with a pocket knife without anesthesia. He encouraged his staff to have orgies with each other, but warned them that they become desensitized due to the constant sexual activity and visual stimulation. He hired a film technician to tape his staff and other volunteers in scientific porn films. His book legitimized every form of sexuality, including bestiality. Where it gets truly dark is Kinsey's frenzied encouragement to 63-year-old pedophile Rex King, of whom he documented 17 hours of sexual crime. Kinsey published much of King's data in Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, where tables summarize King's attempts to bring to orgasm boys between the age of 2 months and 15 years, in some cases over a period as long as 24 hours. Kinsey attributed the data not to one source, but to many. But in 1995, John Bancroft, who was director of the Kinsey Institute until this spring, discovered that all of the data came from King. Kinsey's response to King about his documentation of young children's tears and convulsions while being raped as evidence of orgasm was stark. And this is a quote, "I commend you on the research spirit which would have led you to collect data over these many years." Reisman's mantle was taken up by journalists, somebody, Christo, a Croatian immigrant, angered by sexual education be adopted in her homeland. And this is a quote, "As the debate over sex education was heating up in Croatia, a country where 86% of the population identifies as Catholic, this person found herself watching the Kinsey Syndrome and Kinsey's Pedophiles documents exposing the horrors of Kinsey's research. These horrors include Kinsey paying pedophiles to rape children and time it with a stopwatch. According to Kinsey's books, his published research, and the statements of his assistants in various interviews, not only was Kinsey's research flawed, but it was also criminal. Child sexuality research data was collected from the personal logs of several pedophiles. One in particular kept diaries detailed of over 800 sexual encounters with children and even babies as young as 2 months old." I need to log off here. This is going to be three chapters because we need to get into more of this, and I need to stop. So enough said, right? I think you get the picture. So what's happened is they, when they came back and installed all those transformers around my house, oh, it gets really, yeah, it's really crazy in here at times. Okay, so yeah, I'm going to be logging off here. I'm going to mark my spot so I don't lose it. So I will be able to close this up in the third chapter, and I will get the third chapter done by tomorrow at the latest because we need to understand how these things got started. So now when these people say with confidence that they act like all of this stuff was research and all this kind of stuff, just like every other lie along the way, none of it was how it looked. And if people would only start at the beginning, imagine all the people running around for hours and weeks and days and months trying to discredit this transgender business, right? When really a quick look at their own Wikipedia page could have solved most of the problem, right? Because I think the minute somebody really, really focused on that money person, Benjamin, and the other person, I just have told you so far about the crimes that Kinsey did, and Kinsey did that when men were off at war, and he basically used one known pedophile, acted like it was the work of hundreds of people. And why did not anybody see that chapter in the book? And I will make sure and post that chapter. So I have all those links that I told you about earlier. I already have them posted down below. So I can say with confidence, you can look down below because we really do need to talk more about this and flesh this out. No reason to skip past how this whole thing got started, right? Maybe people will take a little sharper eye at this stuff. So anyhow, I'm going to close this off for now, and I will be headed back on this subject because I think by giving us hormones in a million different ways and then coming up with these ideas, there you go. People start thinking they're gay. They start thinking all kinds of stuff, right? Why wouldn't you start thinking you were gay if you're a boy and all of a sudden you're feeling feminized, right? You're attracted to dolls and all that kind of stuff. All these people did was take some of those things that happened because these kids back then were probably starting to get some hormones in them, right? So I don't think they probably started with the heavy hormones until probably, oh, I don't know, the 80s or 90s or so. Because I think if we want to look at, if somebody wants to explore this topic further, where I would look would be there is charts out there that show the amount of vaccines at kids in this country, because that's what really got me started years ago. Because I kept thinking, why do children in this country get all these vaccines? Well, but if you look at that compared to Europe, I think you can start to see what years has happened, right? And I think it was the 80s was a huge 80s and 90s was a massive escalation. And the 90s was the same era that they were getting all of our news to be under one group, right? So probably a big effort was going on in the 90s. So babies born in the 80s and 90s were probably likely getting what I would consider the starting of the full treatment, right? Because as the vaccines continued on, they became more and more, right? Each kid was getting more and more each year. So I don't know, you look at those patterns and you think, well, what was mixed in with all those vaccines, right? So you can probably start to see why people became so feminized. And it probably took a couple generations to get everybody's neck so short and women looking like men, and probably a couple generations of getting hormones. And then the crazy thing is this, is that people are getting all these hormones through, oh, I don't know. I've got some stuff down here I'll be talking about next, but I actually have some ideas for things for you to look for. But so let's say you're getting all this, let's say you start off as a baby in the 80s, you get your first shot of estrogen and you're a baby boy. And then you go on to be fed vitamins and stuff loaded with estrogen. So before you know it, you're acting like a girl, right? So, and then, or be before you know it, you're acting like a girl. And then you start getting anxiety because, my God, why am I acting like a girl? And then you go looking, and then your doctor says, we got to calm this kid down. And then they start you on some anxiety meds. See how it all starts? So naturally, I think anybody would start to get some anxiety, right? As they uncovered this stuff. So you get anxiety, and then they can feed you more pills. And more pills, probably more hormones in them, right? Now, I can't verify these pills have hormones in them, but I can take a good guess, right? So, and I don't know, look around yourself. Go have some, looking at pictures is both fun and horrifying, right? Because it's fun because you're just kind of looking around and stuff. And I've done all this stuff. I've never once suggested that you do anything that I haven't done myself. So yeah, I spent a lot of time looking on YouTube at high school yearbooks for other people. In other words, people, a lot of people post their high school reunions. They post their high school yearbooks. Just go look. And you'll start to see it becomes pretty easy to pick out the kids who have probably had too many hormones. So then that's the thing where the kids who, at what point do these hormones just mimic the look? See what I'm getting at? So at what point are girls getting enough hormones that they start to get Adam's apples and they're really not all the way transgender? See what I'm saying? So that's why I've been saying for a long time. There are mutant people amongst us already, okay? And I'll be getting into more of that in the next show. But so this show is two of three. Next, I'll do three of three. But yes, there is a specific reason. And actually, this is why I'm always saying, besides starting at the beginning, is always look for the simple, right? Because what they have created this cloud of the extraordinary. Transhumans are going to get you next. A1 is going to take over your life. They have created the absolute other end of things, right? But remember, these people, not that smart, and they're kind of ticky-ticky in the heads themselves, right? Because the same people doing all this against us, in other words, the same people who are figuring out what to spike with hormones, right? Well, how much should we give to cows that will get kid into kids, right? So we get all the kids drinking milk. So now we know. See what I mean? Kids weren't meant to drink milk, okay? But they got all these kids to drink milk. So why was that? Because they wanted to keep them drinking hormones? I don't know. Give your kid milk for healthy bones. Well, that part was a lie. So why were all kids encouraged to drink milk? Well, maybe this is the reason, right? Because if you want to keep a good steady flow of hormones going, you probably want to do it with something that kids are doing all the time. So that's probably why they push kids to drink milk. So yeah, big bowls of cereal with milk, big glasses of milk with every meal. Look back at some of the old milk ads. You got to ask yourself, were those milk ads to push us into hormone usage, right? This has all been about marketing. Marketing, seeing how far they could push us, seeing how much they could charge us to kill us. It's pretty crazy. So, okay, be safe out there. I will be back with episode 3 as soon as I am able to. So be safe out there.